Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
And I'm Judy Nathans.
So we were not here last week.
No. Which was just fine with me.
That was fine. You know, so happy Memorial Day.
Oh, right. We usually also never
we
come
like
after
to
holiday, but you also
extend
had
holiday
a work retreat, so it worked out well.
Yeah. So it's I actually got out of town. Some of my friends said, "What? You're going out
I
of
know.
Town?"
I know. No one believes you get out, especially in your bus.
Right, yeah. Actually, I drove
my
bus.
Did it make it?
It made it, yeah.
To Ipswich?
Well, you know, when you drive a 40-year-old vehicle and you haven't been driving very much in the way of distances, you do like like 37 miles or something. You park it, and then 2 days later, you go with the key and you figure it ain't going to start. But it started just fine.
So you don't periodically start it?
No. Just, you know, you got to, you cross your fingers and you hope.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it goes. Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, it was okay. Actually, up at the Crane Estate is actually an incredibly beautiful place.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of almost surreal when you think
Wait,
about
you,
it.
Wait, they put you up. You don't stay there. You just have the
Great House, which has the LA that looks down toward the ocean, which is just incredible, really.
But that's just for events. They don't house people there, do they?
No. But then there's a thing called the Inn at, the name of the hill, like Castle Hill.
Okay, so it's in the same grounds?
Yeah, it's trustees of reservations that operate it, so they make a little dough off it. And
so anybody can book a room there?
Yeah.
It's probably booked a lot because of these events, though.
Yeah, I mean, it ain't cheap, but it's an incredible place. And, you know, you hiking around there.
Yeah.
It was great.
Nice.
Actually.
Yeah.
So
good.
Yeah. So I mean, I have to go back. It'll be worth it, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we're back. Cambridge City Council came back.
Right. And lots of committee meetings.
A lot of things are happening. I've certainly had my chance to testify at least one of them. Maybe I'll say something
about that. I did hear you.
Yeah.
It was last Tuesday before you went away.
Yeah. Actually, maybe I'll just say something about that since we did talk about that.
Municipal ballot, right?
Yeah, so there was a
government operations.
Yeah, it's actually something that's not actually under the jurisdiction of the Cambridge City Council to decide. The thing is that the 1938 law that established the Plan E Charter gave the Election Commission certain flexibility in modifying some very few aspects of the way the PR elections work in Cambridge. But one of them says, well, if because of some new emerging technology, they have had the right since 1938 to reduce the number of choices that you can express on a ballot to no less than 15.
Mm-hmm. Choices meaning mark off.
Right. Like so first, there's second, no limit on how many candidates can run, but instead of, you know, if you had 29 candidates, in principle, a person would previously
rank 29.
You could have ranked, now extremely few people.
But some people
vote that much.
Diligent.
And
and
I did the experimentation to determine that, in fact, it's absolutely pointless to
I didn't understand Tim Toomey's comment about his first election and how he got it on the 26th vote.
He's wrong. I mean, I can pull out the election data.
Okay.
I think what he means is that in the very, very last count, he was still getting ballots. Now,
because of the exhausted candidate.
Well, the thing is, he was still getting ballots, but he would not have known whether it was a number 27 ballot or whatever.
True. Good point.
Right?
He was just getting ballots.
He was continuing to get it in the very, very last count.
Yeah, so he was missing.
But he would still be getting those. Most of those ballots that he would have been getting were not because he was getting a ballot where he was ranked number 25.
It was probably a ballot that he was ranked number three.
Or something like that, because the thing is that if you have a person who is relatively popular, but who was not elected, it's like say it was the 10th person standing when it's reduced to 10, so they're declared defeated. That person has a lot of ballots that
they're going to get distributed.
That were their original number one ballots, and when they now get counted out, the number two is if there's any candidate still needing ballots,
it's going
to
go to them.
It goes to the number two or the three or whatever whoever
still
needs
it.
So that's what happened.
But that's really misinterpreting stuff. Have you talked to him?
I didn't talk to him about this, but the thing is, the funny thing is I've been watching these folks for so long, including Councillor Toomey.
Yeah.
And so I said to myself, well, if he had to vote on this, I know he's going to vote against it because he always votes against these things.
But then he gave that as a reason.
The same Councillor Toomey who, and I laughed when he did this. So this is not said in with any meanness.
Uh-huh.
Back when we first adopted the computerization of the elections, was about 1995 or six.
I think
1995 or 1996. It was 1997 was the first one we actually did with the computerization. Uh-huh. And it was Councillor Toomey who said, I'm worried that the day after this election, we'll wake up and find out that there have been 9 MIT students elected to the Cambridge City Council. This was his concern about
these technological people.
Oh, they're going to somehow rig the election, right?
Oh, dear.
I don't know if he literally
believed
that.
It's the Russians, Tim.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Way back to Russians
so
now.
Tim says it, whether he's a little steamed or if he's just trying to be funny, I appreciate it. I get a kick out of it.
Yeah, but this was not being funny. I think he really thought that made a difference in his election. But
And like former councillor, former mayor Alice Wolf, there was some concern that you're disenfranchising people
and
limiting choice.
This too, but it's, it's not.
But,
I mean,
but
my goodness.
I think they misunderstand what's really was being proposed.
Right.
So,
everyone gets a chance to be on the ballot.
Yeah. And the thing is that I ran the
to at least two elections.
I truncated the ballots to 15 on actual ballot data and just reran the election.
And even on the ones that were really close.
In this razor thin.
Like six
election
votes, seven
where
votes.
Where there was a recount in 2013,
right.
Identical, just not a single change in any round.
Seriously,
same thing in 2015, and the only change was in 2017 because we had, it wasn't just because we had a lot of candidates. Mm. It was that there were two candidates who never actually reached quota, what that means is that in the very very last round, they're still looking for ballots, so they're actually picking up a few of these sort of ballots that weren't even preferential for them. They were like, I'm going to give that bum a number 26 because I despise him. Well, the ballot goes to the candidate because if they haven't reached quota, they still can.
To reach quota to be elected?
No. It's one.
You just have to exhaust all the ballots.
And I even said this at the hearing that I took the opportunity to say, look, if you're going to be out doing voter education to sort of inform people that you can vote for up to 15.
Right.
Right. By the way, at this point, I think we're probably going to have about 15 to 18 candidates.
Yeah, it doesn't seem
I don't
like
think
a lot
we're
going to
get the big.
Because when is the deadline to declare? July
the deadline, you don't have to declare, but the thing is what you do is you pull papers, as we say. There's all these Cambridge terms. I love it.
Yeah,
are you going to pull papers?
Well, right? I think that's said a lot of places.
It is, but I like it. What do you mean? But some people say, what do you mean pull paper? You can pull nomination papers.
Yeah. And then when's the deadline
and that's,
for that?
July 1st is when they,
and then you have
unless it's on a weekend, but it's usually July 1st.
And then you have to get signatures?
And then you have to get 50 valid signatures. You're allowed to submit up to 100, no more. And there's a reason for that, because every signature counts toward you. In the old days, somebody might actually go around and try and get lots and lots of signatures just, if they were pretty popular, so that it would make it harder for other people to get the signatures.
Oh, that's crazy.
Because you can only be counted for one.
Wasn't there talk
person.
Of trying to raise, I guess when there were so many candidates previously, to raise the threshold, the number of signatures they would need to charter?
You'd have to change the 1938 law. That's
you
one
would.
Thing.
Okay.
The Election Commission doesn't have the authority to change that.
So that would be a law change.
Yeah, you'd have to go for home rule legislation. Honestly, for something as microscopic as that, nobody's going to ever bother to make such a change. Mm. But it's a pretty low threshold for
entry.
Well,
that's what I mean.
Getting 50 signatures. Heck, I could even get 50.
I know, but what I'm saying is it would separate really serious candidates from someone that
honestly, I've seen some pretty non-serious candidates just go right out and get themselves over 50 valid signatures.
Yeah.
It's not hard to get
50.
Right. I mean, the thing is, that just gets you on the ballot.
It doesn't do anything else.
It doesn't get you elected. If you had a lot of kind of fringy candidates, and we've had some elections where we had a fair number of fringy candidates, it just sort of becomes kind of annoying.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to disenfranchise anyone or in any way hinder anyone's
fringe
right to
away,
be a candidate.
Right.
But the truth is that if insofar as there's any value at all left in things like candidate forums, running through a parade of 27 candidates, you know, where they all sort of say the same thing in the same way.
To the Democratic debates. Oh, my
gosh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's going to be ridiculous. 25th
and the 20th. No, 24 and the 25th.
I heard they were doing things now for the presidential debates.
Right. September, the third one, they're going to have to reach certain thresholds.
You have to reach thresholds to get into tier one panel.
And this one, the second, threshold's less.
So they'll probably have other panels
for
the other candidates.
Something like 3% in the polls of the
I think that's the only way to do it.
Yeah, and also money. 130,000 donors from 20 states.
Yeah.
A certain amount. I don't know. It makes sense. Right.
I think they...
There's 24 candidates.
Well, it's also a practical necessity.
Yeah.
Right? The thing is that if you don't weed it out in some way, then you're just going to be looking at 20
indistinguishable
people.
You know what's annoying? Is it too late to do ranked choice voting for the primary in Massachusetts?
I don't know. I know that there were a lot of the people from Fair Vote, your national group, have been promoting that we should be using ranked choice balloting for the primaries.
Yeah.
And my first question when I heard that was, I said, well, and what are you going to do with the ranked choice ballots? Because, you know, so what if you can rank the candidates? That just gives you a lot of data. But how do you count the ballots, right?
Well, I thought they count the way you would
Well, but the thing is, if they were electing nine councillors, they would keep transferring ballots.
Oh, that's
until
right.
You
we're only electing
down to nine.
One candidate.
If it was a winner take all election, you would whittle it all the way down until there was one candidate.
Okay, but then
standing.
You might have but for instance, the one in Lowell, that's an example given because they won by very low.
No, I actually.
Or even Chicago.
If I were declared king tomorrow.
Oh. Okay.
Then what I would do is I would mandate the use of ranked ballots for this. I think it's a good idea, but people need to be really clear what you're going to do with those ballots.
True.
Now, if in fact the only I don't know what the rules are, and they may vary from state to state.
Yeah.
But let's say you're in a state where in order to get any delegates at all from the popular election, you have to... No. Let's just say that you have to... the only candidates who can get delegates would be those who break a certain threshold of, let's say, 15%.
Oh, right? And states have different
rules
about that.
Right,
okay.
So the thing is, then what you would do, and again, you'd have to make sure your voting machines could handle this, and
true.
I don't know that they can.
Probably not.
Right, but the thing is that if you did it that way, then what you could do is you could start off with your, what are we up to now, 24?
It seems that way,
right? So let's just say that, I mean, first off, with 24, it's actually not crazy to believe that you could have zero candidates achieving the 15% threshold.
That's a good point. You're right. It'll all be like 10, 9, 11.
So nobody gets any ballots, right?
Right. Wow.
So that's crazy.
Yeah.
But let's just say, just to make believe that it was a state where you had to get 15%. Then what you could do is you could just start off with your 25 candidates, reduce it to 24, 23, 22, and you just keep whittling it. And then some people hit 15%, and then they're declared, quote, elected.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you can do 1, 2, 3, then your third would go,
Right, but the thing is that, you know, in Cambridge, because of proportional representation, you would then, nobody would be able to get above a certain threshold.
Right.
But that's not how you would want to do it, because if somebody was enormously popular and legitimately was entitled to 50% of the ballots, you should let them get 50%.
No, I understand that. So there is a difference.
Yeah.
I understand.
So you
that,
might only have one candidate who breaks 15%, which is how I probably wouldn't be the case.
Right, but when you have like a 29% and a 30%, that's not right.
The Democrats actually typically, I don't think this is true for every state, but typically they allocate ballots roughly proportionally according to your share in the primary.
Right, that's true. It's a fraction.
Of those who actually break the threshold. Okay, the Republicans... we're doing primarily winner take all. That's
right.
why.
That's why Trump.
That's
is
why
president.
Trump is president of the United States.
Change that.
If they had done a different system, it's quite likely he would never have even gotten the nomination.
That's right.
So the Republicans should be taking a good strong look at how they do business. But you know, the people who are in charge of the party right now, they are
they're
typically
not
making
a
the
thing.
Rules. So they, I don't know for sure, but I think they may actually solidified it.
It's
so
Trump's
to make
party
it even
now,
more.
They say.
Yeah, and that's a pretty sad
Trump
reality.
Trump and McConnell, I know.
Yeah. But The thing is the Democrats, if they're going to allocate proportionally, which I think they typically do,
yes,
they but do. Not to everybody. So if you have somebody gets 1% of the ballots in the primary, they're not necessarily going to get 1% of the delegates.
They have to reach a certain.
You have to, let's say it's 10%, 15%, whatever. Mm-hmm. So what you could do is you could just keep reducing the field, mm-hmm. right, until you, and then anybody who hasn't achieved that, you eliminate them, transfer the ballots. Continue doing it until the only ones remaining are the ones who have surpassed the threshold.
Yep.
Then you take a good look at them and you say, okay, you got 50% of the votes, you got 35%, you got 15%. Mm-hmm. You three get ballots according to those proportions.
That makes sense.
But, you know, the thing is one of the things that bothers me, actually, even with the campaign for ranked choice voting, and they were all over the River Festival in Central Square getting signatures to support ranked choice voting, which is, I think is great. But the thing is that they sell the idea of ranked choice voting, and that's great, but they don't say what you're going to do with it. And so if you're going to use ranked choice ballots like we do in Cambridge to elect a proportionally representative legislature, right, or school committee, that's one thing. If you're going to use ranked choice ballots to have a series of runoffs to elect one person, that's a somewhat different thing.
But I think most of the time that's what they're talking about.
It's usually single winner, but the thing is in a state primary, presidential primary, it's not single winner unless you had a winner-take-all system. So what that means is you have to elect multiple candidates.
Right, but at least you get more of a choice than just putting one.
Yeah, no, I think it's true.
It's more of a will of the people.
Well, the other thing, too, is that if you have five, actually, you could have 10 similar candidates who are appealing to a block of voters.
I think in the Democrats, they have like 20 similar candidates.
Well, I mean, there's enough differences because, honestly, what tends to, sadly, dominate the discussion and the choices is often identity politics when you've got that many. Right, so it's like, okay, there'll be
women
candidates, gay, black candidates, gay
black,
candidates, whatever.
White,
and
white.
Right,
and
so
the old ones are winning.
Right, well, it's just kind of
the old guy. The old
some
white
people
guys
were
are winning.
Some people are sort of bothered and surprised
and Bernie
by that. I'm not.
Is not going
well,
away.
I have always known that sort of mainline Democrats throughout the country are not as fringy as people make them out to be.
No, but there's a big difference.
Right,
I don't. Know.
I think
You're
they're
right.
a lot more moderate than the revolutionaries are willing to admit. And, you know, they're just regular people, you know, and...
different than, say, what happened with Mike Capuano and Ayanna Pressley, because they were mainline Democrats.
Right,
and
a year when it was sort of, revolution was a little bit in the air, and women candidates were actually having an advantage in an election like that. And you know, sometimes you also just want to... You know, go for the shiny new candidate too. You know,
but also the district had changed, and it really was.
Yeah.
More
oh, it's
of
true.
A,
oh, yeah. Absolutely true.
And she's fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, they just wanted to make a change, so they did it. It
you're saying that the rest of the country though might be more conservative type Democrats.
I wouldn't even say the word conservative. Yeah. I would just say.
Well, they like Joe Biden. I mean, not that he's conservative, but he's sort of a known quantity. He's older.
Right, and I think a lot of Democrats across the country are worried.
That
I think
no one else can beat Trump.
No. I think they're worried that the whole process could end up nominating somebody who's absolutely unelectable against Trump.
I don't know. Like a Seth Moulton, Kamala Harris.
No. Well,
what about that?
See, these are candidates who I think actually could sell on Main Street ultimately.
Yeah, I mean he's a Marine. He was a Marine.
But
if
you end up with candidates who, because let's say it was the revolutionaries were to sort of rise up,
Bernie might actually.
Not inconceivable that he could be elected in that a head-to-head race. But the thing is that. You know, nobody yet has witnessed the type of ad campaigns that would happen if you had somebody who was kind of left of Lenin up there as the standard bearer. You know, it would be kind
but
of
also there's still
harkening back to the 1950s.
Challenges to Trump. I mean, Weld is declared.
Yeah,
I don't know how far that's going to go.
I saw a picture of him on a street, you know, looking into, you know, checking the menu at a restaurant, and nobody on the street knew who he was, except the person who was snapping the picture. But anyway, on the ranked choice voting, the thing is that if, you're, in fact, what you're going to do is just come up with a better way of allocating the delegates state by state by state, I think that would be wonderful. You know, but it might actually have to be done state by state. And my personal prediction is it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
The thing is, that when you want to make any kind of change in election methodology, the lead time to do that is, we're talking years, multiple years. You cannot in 2019 say, well, this is how we ought to do it in a 2020 election, because most states aren't even going to have the technology available to carry this out, unless you want to take days and days and days to count ballots by hand.
So basically to do it state by state, maybe.
You know, in some states where they have the technology in place, great.
Yeah.
You know, but that's just not
that'll settle how it is itself typically then, right now. So we spent almost this whole half, but that's it's important. Elections are important.
Elections are important, yeah. By the way, so
any
the,
new candidates for the municipal election? No.
No new candidates, but I did hear one new rumor of a woman on 5th Street in East Cambridge who may run. So, sort of part of the Nadeem Mazin circle of of political philosophy, I believe.
Okay.
But you know, who knows? But no more actual filing of paperwork with the state to raise money, which is really the measure of when somebody's actually active.
Have you seen money totals change?
I have actually. Yeah. I updated the total list today. And in fact there's actually a rather significant amount of money coming in for some of the new candidates now. It's interesting to me, though, that if you're a person who's a little more on the moderate side like me, what you're seeing is a lot of new candidates, but most of the new ones that are emergent are a little on the kind of revolutionary side. And consequently, I'm not so convinced that, I mean, this may be proportional representation, but I don't know where my my proportion of the representation is going to come from at this point. Because, you know, it's very possible that some of the candidates that I have liked in the past may actually no longer be candidates.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be at all surprised if one or two incumbents dropped out still. That's not out of the question.
Really? Beyond Jan? Wow.
Sure, it's possible. You know, you know, they want to do this forever. And the other thing, too, is that if you've got these emergent new candidates and if they're raising big money, that starts to send a message as well.
So why did you take her name out? Isn't there money still in her account? Or did
Who's that? Jan?
I don't see Jan Devereaux.
Oh, I'm just not including it in there because she's just not an active candidate.
All
When in the table that I maintain, right, which is which is this one. I have one political action committee included because they're raising piles of money. And when we really get into the thick of things, you watch ABC is basically going to try and call the shots here, which I think is a shame because I kind of would prefer not to have political action committees tipping the scales here, but you can't stop them. But you know, the new candidates like Bahram Azim is actually raising $4,000, which is small relative to some others.
Still,
like Charles Franklin's got,
He's got
over $8,600. Adrienne Musgrave, who ran again, she's the one, she's been raising huge amounts of money.
Really.
So she's up near 20,000.
Yeah.
Right. And she hasn't spent a lot yet. So she's got one of the biggest campaign chests right now.
Other
ready
than Mark.
To roll.
Yeah.
But this fellow, this Ben Simon even did some fundraising. So he's,
he's
got himself a pile of money. And, there's, Jivan Sabrina Wheeler.
Yeah,
he's raised over $8,800.
He's doing a lot of. And, we got a little flyer from him.
And Nicola Williams was working at the Cambridge River Festival.
Yeah.
I chatted with her a bit. She's raised over
$9,000
as well.
Yeah.
You know, so so the thing is that it's not like, you know, some of these candidates are potentially substantial. You know, it's kind of hard to say for sure how successful they're going to be.
Right.
You know, if you have 8 out of 9 incumbents do run, it's still kind of, it's still fundamentally a difficult thing to break in.
Yes.
Because you have to do better than one of the incumbents.
Right.
It's not enough to be attractive because we're not going to elect more than 9.
Right.
You know, so somebody, one of them is going to win the lottery, right, presumably. And, you know, and it's not so easy to target as some might think. I mean, you might say, all right, if Jan Devereaux is not running, then maybe you go after the voters who would have voted for Jan, but many of those voters may very well now simply be beefing up Dennis Carlone's numbers or or one of the other women candidates, right?
Right.
You know, that's high on their list of criteria. So the thing is that some of the new candidates, if they try going after the people who might have otherwise voted for Jan Devereux, that might actually be a losing proposition. You know, fundamentally, I think the best way to do it is you have to build your own quota. You have to target your own quota, go out and get them. And if you're getting them from somebody, that's harder than getting your own, you know.
But right, it's but you hard first to do find your own, but then you align yourself, especially if someone's leaving.
Well, I think, yeah. You know, one of the things that may happen, you know, is I don't know whether this sort of the existence of slates and political action committees are going to sort of be tipping the scale a lot this year. I know that people are going to try to do that. That's in the pattern in the last few elections.
Especially with this affordable. That's going to be interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But the thing is that I would actually argue that if you've got multiple candidates all fighting over the same pool, then that's not necessarily your best strategy as a new candidate to be part of the pool because, you know, I'm not going to name the names, but I'll tell you, there's at least one or two candidates who I know is going to be endorsed by a better Cambridge.
Oh, yeah.
Who are going to be just a nothing but a sacrificial lamb to feed their other candidates.
Maybe.
And, you know, the thing is, the endorsing organizations like the old Cambridge Civic Association, they never tell the candidate that that's their job, is basically to die and have your ballots feed the rest. But that's the way it works, because if you only
Robert's telling you.
If you only have enough oomph to elect X number of candidates, you know, you're not going to elect everybody in your slate in all likelihood. So somebody's going to feed the rest, you know. So in a way, your chief competition becomes the people on your own slate, quite honestly. Right? So that's really where the intramural battle is going to take place.
Well, that'll be interesting.
I actually think that there's probably some opening for people. I don't know whether this overlay thing is going to be the defining issue, but or whether it's going to be bikes again or whatever. But if it was the overlay. But if it is, the thing is that, you know, once word starts going out around that, there might actually be opportunity for people who are not enthralled with that to actually target voters.
I wonder the people that are against it are also for the whole courthouse to be affordable housing. I bet some of those same people are on those petitions.
Among the activists, activists are not going to swing the election. So,
no, but still.
You know, the elections are much more broad-based. So.
Interesting piece of
Anyway.
See you next segment.
See you in 3 minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.